It's time for Ask an Expert. Every weekday at this time, we're giving you access to top experts in various fields related to the pandemic. Today, new data from the Bay Area Council shows that our commuting patterns have changed a lot during the pandemic. And even though fewer people are going into the office for work, traffic levels remain high. To answer your questions and take a look at what commuting looks like in the future, we're joined on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Karen Philbrick, Executive Director of the Mineta Transportation Institute at San Jose State. Karen, thanks for the time.
And thank you, Holly, for inviting me today.
Sure. I'm wondering, we're looking at what the Bay Area Council study looked at, and they said that 40% of employers expect their workers to return to their places of work 3 days a week, probably, I'm guessing, like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And that's going to happen, and that's what's going to go forward, about two-thirds of the workforce back in the office. So what does that mean for our commute patterns, our roads, and how we end up paying for things?
Well, that's an excellent question. And before I answer that, I'd like to just say that transportation is something that touches all of our lives, whether it's through the mobility options we select to transport ourselves, the food we eat, the clothes we wear, or the devices we use to remain connected. So this is a critically important conversation on a number of levels. As it relates to these newest findings, it's absolutely fascinating because pre-COVID, you could actually graph urban travel as a double-humped camel, with sharp morning and evening peaks. But that traditional twice-daily surge of users on our roads has altered. Rather than ending rush hour, COVID actually appears to have merely transformed it into something different. These new trip patterns we're seeing with pandemic-altered flows of commerce, recreation, and a fresh onslaught of online shopping delivery vehicles cause bouts at different times and unexpected places from what we're used to with our traditional business commute in the morning and evening.
So instead of a big curve in the morning and another big curve in the afternoon, what do you kind of describe what you are actually seeing if you graph it out?
Well, Eric, that's a great question. I think we can all recall in 2020 when our roads and our bridges were absolutely empty. What we're seeing now is vehicle miles traveled rival those of pre-COVID levels. But we're just seeing that traffic is happening throughout the day, whether we're entering the roadways at 9 a.m. or at 1 p.m., it's almost an equivalent level of cars that we're battling with.
So what should we be expecting? I mean, you know how they used to say maybe there's flex time, you can maybe drive in on the off hours, but if maybe there's not an off hour.
I'm not sure that we're going to see those off hours as we transition to this new normal in our business setting. Many of our technology firms, including Adobe, Salesforce, Facebook/Meta, Google, Apple, Twitter, Uber, I can go on and on. You get the idea. They are implementing either permanent hybrid or permanent remote working options for their employees. And people are taking advantage of this. What we are seeing is that productivity was not altered negatively during work from home during COVID. And we're also seeing that people's quality of life has dramatically increased. They're enjoying those extra minutes and hours in their days where they're not having to commute. Rather, they're walking from one room to another and engaging in their day in a much more calm and stress-free manner.
Well, wasn't this what we wanted or said we wanted, a slower increase in the number of vehicles on the road? And now we have an opportunity to have a fewer number of vehicles on the road, and we're not taking it.
Yes, and part of that problem is public transit. Prior to COVID, we had a much larger ridership on our public transit systems in the Bay Area and across the nation. Unfortunately, fear over transmission caused an abrupt departure of people taking transit options. Right now, today, across the nation, public transit ridership remains down approximately 27%. And in the Bay Area, that's closer to 40%. We need people to view transit as a viable option and not view it through the lens of contamination, because we know from the research that public transit is not a super spreader. People need to continue to be careful, get vaccinated, wash their hands, wear their masks, and practice physical distancing, but they need to get back on our buses, our light rails, and our commuter rail systems. That is the answer to reducing congestion in the Bay Area.
I'm wondering whether that messaging is being put out there sufficiently, because when you think about like BART or Muni, it's not just, you know, whether or not it's safe, you know, for the virus. And, you know, BART has brought in new, you know, air purifiers, and they're circulating mm-hmm. the air, and they're all pointing out all the things that they're doing safe. But then you also hear headlines about, you know, how people are getting mugged on their way to their cars. And on Muni, you see, you know, headlines about people or drivers that are being attacked. So there are all sorts of concerns when it comes to different aspects of safety that people are grappling with before they decide whether or not to get on public transit.
Well, those are excellent points, Holly, and I agree with everything you said. And you brought up something critically important, which is the concept of assault. We see assault on our transit operators, unfortunately, on a fairly regular basis, pre-COVID and post-COVID. Right now, the conversation focuses on mask enforcement. We don't want our operators taking that task on because it introduces conflict between the riding public and the operators. Instead, we want people to follow the mandate for safety for all confirmed and to enter our system safely. That public mask mandate on transit is here to stay for the foreseeable future. In terms of the headlines that we see about people getting physically assaulted or feeling unsafe at our different stations, certainly that is happening. There's a lot of research addressing how people feel, particularly women. Are they feeling safe? Will they take transit for their connecting trips to support their family and their own commute patterns? I think sometimes the media likes headlines that grab attention and maybe blow out of proportion some instances so that it is fear-mongering in some ways. I'm certainly not saying that assault does not happen. I'm just suggesting that it happens to a lesser degree than what the media might suggest.
I'm curious. Europe, for example, is much more reliant on public transit than we are. Do we see the same sort of reluctance to go back to public transit there that we're seeing here?
No, we are not seeing that. And there's a variety of reasons for that. First of all, the public transit systems in Europe are much more seamless for the end user. They don't have to connect so many times on different buses and different lines. Rather, they enter a station, they board a train, and they depart at their end location. Our problem here in the United States focuses on the first and last mile connectivity issues. We know that the general person is not willing to walk more than a quarter of a mile or a half of a mile to reach a transit system, so we need to make it easier for them. One of the answers to that challenge is personal mobility devices. What do I mean by that? Think of scooters, shared bikes, skateboards, things of that nature. That helps a user reach our buses and our light rail system, making it much more likely that they'll use our transit options.
We're speaking with Karen Philbrick, Executive Director of the Mineta Transportation Institute at San Jose State. This after the Bay Area Council came out with a report showing that our commuting patterns have changed a lot during the pandemic. If you have a question, email us at askus@kcbsradio.com. That's askus@kcbsradio.com. Karen, I want to ask about the future of public transit. So let's look at BART. BART is at about 26% of pre-pandemic levels. They rely a lot on the fare box. But what happens after the federal pandemic transit money runs out?
That's an interesting question, and one I do not have a solid answer for. What we are seeing across the nation is experimentation with free transit, because fare box recovery varies wildly depending on the system. For example, BART is funded more by the fees that riders pay versus Valley Transportation Authority, which relies on different funding sources. So it's an interesting topic. I am not sure what the answer is, Holly.
I was just thinking that, oh, my gosh, you know, once all of that money from the feds runs out, all these transit systems are going to be, you know, I don't know, are they laying people off? I mean, does it make any sense for them to go the opposite way and add more lines or service so more people will come back?
Adding more service is always critical to the success of our system, but we also need to make it user friendly, which we've talked about access being an important part of that conversation. But transit is here to stay. It's a public resource, just like our roads and our highways. We have a population that must rely on transit to reach their destinations, whether it's recreation, business, or even healthcare. Those people are transit dependent. They do not have a choice. Whereas someone like you or me, for example, can make a decision to carpool, use our single occupancy vehicle, or use transit if it's easily accessible.
You know, are we ever going to see a return to morning and afternoon drive, or is this the future, sort of a steady state of busy traffic all day long?
I think this is the future. I think that COVID allowed us to have the world's largest naturalistic study. We saw that efficiency remained at an even level, that people were happier, that they were more well-adjusted in some cases, not everyone. It in large part is dictated by personality profiles and how people relate to the world. But I do not think we will ever go back to the traditional 9-to-5 work hours. We've seen too much change during this time with too many positive outcomes to revert back to what the traditional method was.
Let's look at some of the bridges. It looks like the 86% of traffic levels from November of 2019. Some bridges, Antioch, Carquinez, are at nearly 100% of pre-pandemic levels. And on the Bay Bridge, current rush hour volumes are higher than they were pre-pandemic. I'm wondering how we're going to pay for things when so much of the transportation and the infrastructure relies on that. Is it R1 or R2 or the tolls? And, you know, the tolls are going up come January. And that was something that was, you know, put in place long ago before the pandemic. But still, you know, can we count on that same amount of funding if the commute patterns change?
Well, the commute patterns will dictate the funding that is collected. But that is why some cities are experimenting with something called congestion pricing, which levies a hefty fee on drivers who commute to downtown areas during busy rush hours. So this simultaneously disincentivizes driving while creating a funding source for transit agencies, which can then use that money to provide more frequent, reliable service. Let me give you an example. When London implemented congestion pricing, traffic dropped by 30%, while public transit ridership rose by 38%. We need to be creative with the different interventions that we put into place, and looking at best practices on a global scale can help inform those decisions.
Well, if there was one thing you would assume would get people out of their cars and into public transit, it would be $5 a gallon gasoline, but I guess that's not working that way.
We're not seeing that just yet, but that is also convoluted with the discussion of COVID. Some people are not feeling comfortable commuting with other individuals, particularly strangers. So for them, the decision to pay over $5 a gallon in gas is justified. Others might not have that decision due to lack of resources, which is why we need to continue impressing upon the public that transit ridership is safe. And Holly, several minutes ago, you asked me about the messaging around safety on transit.
Yeah.
And I want to impress upon you that the American Public Transportation Association, which represents 93% of the transit agencies nationwide, has a safety and security protocol that they've implemented to help the riding public feel more protected as they go back onto transit. Many of our transit agencies have signed on to this pledge. It includes different protocols for cleanliness, for sanitization, for airflow, and other types of activities.
Karen, thanks very much for the time. Karen Philbrick is Executive Director of the Mineta Transportation Institute at San Jose State. You can listen to the entire interview at kcbsradio.com, and all of our previous Ask an Expert interviews are posted there, kcbsradio.com/askanexpert.